Non-binary friends, everyone on the spectrum and in between. This is another episode of The Shudder Show. My name is Ken Stachnik, and this is my co-host.
My name is David Marlowe.
And today, we are doing a little bit of a Shudder Show double feature, baby. Double feature, baby!
Oh, I had no idea he was going to pull that.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do, we're doing, we said we were going to either doing Rare Exports, A Christmas Story, or we were going to be doing the Creep Show Holiday Special, and we decided to do a little something special for all of you.
Merry Christmas, bitches!
And do both. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. David, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I spent the whole day doing a bit of carpentry in my one-bedroom apartment, so I'm both overwhelmed but slightly proud of myself.
And
so,
filled with sawdust, no less.
Oh, yes. Got plenty of sawdust in my ears and other crevices, so I'm ready to get this bitch started.
Fantastic.
Nice six-pack, a Blue Moon.
I'm pretty
Given
excited.
That the holidays are gone, it's time to move on to that summer drink.
Indeed. So first off, we will be talking about the 2010 film Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale, a Finland movie from Finland that I would kind of describe as, what if Steven Spielberg had directed The Thing, but what if The Thing was Santa Claus instead?
It both ended up being the movie that I expected and not at all the movie that I expected, both in a wonderful way and in a slightly disappointing way, but at the same time, I walked away being like, I'm very happy I watched this film, and then also made me want to go watch the two short films that it's based off of, which the same director worked on.
He did all of them. The two short films are actually technically sequels to this.
I guess that makes sense.
Yes, the two short films are kind of what happens as a result of this film, the feature film being a prequel to the situation at hand going on in Norway. So, David, why don't you go ahead and give our audience a brief summary on what the plot is.
Okay, my non-spoilery synopsis of this would be, tiny child with sad past realizes that Santa Claus is coming to town, but not in the way that he expects.
That's pretty good. Do you want to go like a little bit more kind of in depth and kind of give us like a basic setup? You don't need to pay everything off, but just kind of.
What happens if you decide to ransom off Santa?
That's another bad way. Okay, so this movie starts off with a Finnish drilling crew up in the mountains, and they find something strange buried deep, deep in the mountain. And at the same time, we have a group of reindeer hunters whose stock is slaughtered. And we begin to suspect that perhaps what is buried in the mountain has a connection to the death of all the reindeer hunters. Well, they're more like reindeer farmers.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. It's
or reindeer cowboys, maybe, would be a good way to put it.
I think that's wranglers.
Reindeer wranglers.
Yeah,
there we go.
Reindeer wranglers.
Are alliterative and fun. So the reindeer wranglers then assume that there's been a connection, so they go up to the mine to find out what the hell is going on, and then they find out what is going on is so much crazier than what they thought. David, for you, what's the best way to put this? What did this movie make you think about the most? Like, what inspirations, what other movies, what other films? What other people?
Strangely enough, I had a very Super 8 vibe to it.
Oh, definitely. It's got a very strong Amblin, Stranger Things.
It does a very good job of telling this story from the child's perspective. And that almost makes it more intimidating because, obviously, as a child, childs are far more defenseless, or so we believe. And, I don't know, it held that sense of mystery and wonder to the myth that is Santa Claus, and then takes the myth and flips it on its head, pretty much.
Well, it takes the Santa Claus that we know from our upbringing here in the West, and then mixes it with the Finnish origin story of Santa Claus.
Which, is that true that the origin of Santa Claus comes from Norse mythology?
Yes, and in Finland specifically. And then, on top of all of that, it does a really interesting thing where it turns, eventually in the movie, Santa Claus essentially into a commodity, which is kind of basically what
Christmas has become.
Yeah, exactly what Christmas has become. And so it is a movie that definitely works on multiple layers, and part of the reason I think it works so well is because it is a movie that plays what it's doing absolutely straight the entire time. It never once winks at the camera. It never once laughs at what it's doing. It never once stares into the lens and tells the audience, this is pretty silly, eh? No, it 100% treats what's going on as what all of the characters would be dealing with.
Yeah, it doesn't play the movie off as a joke.
No, not at all. And I think that's one of its biggest strengths. Now, one of the other biggest strengths I would say that the movie has is the role of Pietre Cunito, which is played by Oni Tomilia. I apologize to anyone from Finland who is listening. I'm sure I just butchered that. But he is the young kid in this. He is the one who is stuck playing the Elliot role. He's the one playing the young boy in the Spielberg movie. That everyone underestimates and then ends up proving himself. And one of the things I found really fascinating was, David, are you familiar with the Russian film Come and See?
I am not. What is that?
It is an absolutely amazing, fantastic Russian war film that is mostly played in close-ups. And Oni in this movie really reminds me a lot of the main character in Come and See. Just the expressions on his face, the way that he is able to make you feel by seeing him look is, I think, really astounding. A lot of the other actors I thought were really great as well. Jordan Tamilia, which is Oni's father, played his father in it. So that's part of the reason that those two characters have like such a strong bond in the film is because they're actually father and son.
It's great because the relationship between the father and the son in this is very chilly almost. In the sense that like there is warmth there, but it's a very harsh warmth.
Yes, and that's the complicated thing that I think they get right is you can tell that like the harshness comes out of love and or frustration, that kind of like, come on!
I also, like, and I also love that they address the idea that the mother is no longer in the picture without having to hit you over the head with it. They are very much one line here. They don't even say whether or not the mother is still alive or not.
Yeah, we don't have to have a scene where they go to the cemetery and we have a big, you know, I miss your father scene. There's no, like, the closest thing that they get is the dad kind of sucks at cooking gingerbread. He's not terrible at it. It's not he's incompetent. He does burn the roast at one point, but it's not like,
and he's you can tell he's frustrated with his son. His son is not quite what he wants him to be.
Exactly.
And so it's sort of the idea of like the very conservative father being disappointed in his semi-weak son.
Well, and it's also refreshing because he's not full Kramer versus Kramer where he's just this person who's like, I've never learned to cook before. How am I supposed to do? Yeah, exactly. It's much more of a, he's not great at it and he's certainly not as good as his mom was, but like,
his priority is keeping his son alive during the winter.
Exactly. Which I think is a really nice way of approaching this that doesn't make this too cringeworthy. It doesn't make it kind of unwatchable. I will say also this is a movie that absolutely fails the Bechdel test in every way, shape, and form. I don't even know if there's a woman in
the crew.
There probably is one in the crew. I don't believe there's a
single It's been a very uncomfortable shoot for her.
There's a Chanton Anderson who played Trina, which was uncredited, and I don't remember what she was or where she was. So, like, it is definitely a very male-forward movie.
Finnish ladies, if you are looking for representation, this is not the film for you.
No, not at all. Now, this was a low-budget movie. This cost about $2.2 million and was shot for about 17 days.
That is impressive.
However, they also did 200 days of post, which is just a... Guys knew how to spend their money. They had, like, because this movie does not look like a $2.2 million movie. $2.2 million is about the same budget as Sharknado. 17 days is about how long we shot Clown Town for. You can do a lot with 17 days, especially if you spend your money correctly. And then you spend a lot of that money in post. The CGI in this is fantastic for the money. The effects in this are fantastic for the money. The choices to not show big chunks of what's happening and just imply them. The number of deaths that are like a hard hat filled with corn syrup being chucked into the frame and someone going, ah, goes a long way to making this movie have a lot more going on than what you see immediately on screen anyway.
I do wish that they'd been able to get at least another half a million so I could have gotten a little bit more of a horror element at the end after the twist. But outside of that, like, I get it. I completely get it.
I think a lot of it is also, it's the tone they're going for. They're going for much more something like Jaws, which is definitely a horror movie, but is definitely more of an adventure film. And I think you can tell that from this movie, if nothing else, just from the music, which is A, fantastic, but B, also very John Williams-esque and very much reminiscent of a lot of the Raiders of the Lost Ark themes and a lot of the Jaws themes as well.
Oh, it's lovely.
And it's got a lot of pounding rhythm and melody to it that gives you much more of an adventurous feel than maybe the... There's a lot of John Carpenter in this movie, but I would say there's a stronger Spielberg element than there is a Carpenter element to it. And I think the music is the place that you can definitely see which way they were leaning, because there are definitely scenes that are hardcore Carpenter. It's the music for me that really brings it out. And I want to give a shout out to Jelmari Hollander and his brother Juso, who wrote and directed this movie together. They also did the two short films. One was the 2003 short Rare Exports Incorporated, and then the 2005 sequel Rare Exports, The Official Safety Instructions.
Which I love that one.
Oh, both of them.
Got it. Well, the safety really instructions fun. Was fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, that I think is a great example of them stretching their wings a little bit, where going back to their first one, Rare Exports Incorporated, I think is another great example of them showing how much they can get away with not showing what they're getting away with.
And it's such an it seemed like such a simple shoot.
Oh, absolutely. And that's I think, the genius to it, because then if it's a simple shoot that they can spend their money on getting a quality image, on being able to shoot at the right time of day, making sure the makeup is on point, getting the right actors at the right time, making sure that all those minor things are dialed in, where if you have a really, really complicated shoot, it's very easy to get hung up on just getting the basics right, mm-hmm. and then you can't get any of the details that really make the shot sing correct. Yeah.
Even the locations, like, all they needed was, cool, we need to be in the wilderness during the winter. Cool.
It's Finland, we can probably do that.
Do you have a warehouse crate? You do. Marvelous.
Perfect.
Get me a Santa hat.
And I think you can definitely see how the idea kind of progressed over time. In the first two shorts, they definitely refer to the, which in the movie are eventually revealed to be Santa's helpers. They are referred to as Father Christmases. And so I think the idea kind of evolved from the elves to the... started with the Santa, the wild Santas, and then those became the wild elves, and then they built that to the big reveal that happens in...
Which I love. I do love that reveal.
Yes, absolutely. And which means, I think, at this point, we're going to be entering the spoiler zone. We're going to be crossing over. So if If this movie sounds great, and it is great, we encourage you, if you don't want to have anything spoiled, pause it right now. Go watch it and then come back. If not, we're going to spoil it.
And it's a short watch, too. Like, a lot of these films 90, that we pick...
95 minutes, 100 minutes?
Yeah, like an hour, 30 minutes max, I think.
Yeah, $1.40 maybe total.
But yeah, no, I loved the twist. I absolutely... And I liked the reveal because I thought... And that was what made me wish that they steered more in the horror element because I'm just like, oh, I want to see my whole... The whole monster movie angle where they get killed off one by one, and ultimately there's the face-off between the child and the big fat man in red. And it's, I don't know. But then when you understand that it has a shoestring budget of $2 million, you're like, I completely understand why they went the direction that they did. But I love the reveal of them being like, we're going to sell you Santa Claus. We're ransoming him off to you.
Yeah,
and then he's like, oh, no, I'm sorry. That's not Santa Claus. It's one of his
minions.
Yeah, it's one of his helpers. He's like, what? And then you're just like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I have a feeling that somewhere there exists a version of their script where the giant Santa Claus that is encased in ice gets out Gojira style from Godzilla King of the Monsters.
Yeah.
However, I think it was just agreed like, well, the rest of the movie can look really, really good, and we cannot have the giant Santa Claus monster get out, or we can do the opposite of that and have the movie look like crap, but it ends with a giant Santa Claus monster running around, and also the Santa Claus monster won't look that good because we won't have any money. And I think they absolutely made the right choice. I would much rather... them have saved their pennies and maybe then made like a Rare Exports 2 or something where once they had more money they could stretch their wings a little bit, but that ended up not happening. This movie did end up making money. It made about $4 million on its $2 million budget, and then they turned that into the next movie that they made, which was Big Game with Samuel L. Jackson and then with the same kid again in the role, Oni Tamilia. And that movie ended up unfortunately only making about $8 or $9 million.
Mm-hmm.
It ended up making about $4 million, but cost this time $8 or $9 million. And so unfortunately that was kind of like the last movie that this filmmakers had a chance to make at the moment, because well, it's just unfortunately the way the movie business works sometimes.
Yeah, it really is a shame. And then Big Game is something that I do want to check out because it does seem like an interesting premise. You know, I like supporting more niche movies that you wouldn't see or never really got the support that they needed to get in the first place. But we would love to see a movie like Rare Exports and Big Game like really get that cult following that hopefully at some point pays off for them in the long run. Because as we're growing up now, or as we get older, I'm beginning to see a lot of these movies that were just kind of meh back in the day and didn't really take in or net a whole bunch of money. Now I see them every year.
Mm-hmm.
Every year. Krampus now, which, you know, didn't do quite so hot in the box office. Did all right for the season that it came out in. And as far as movies go, was a lot of fun, but was still just kind of, had an okay ending. But now I see it on people's list every year. And people now watch that movie every year. What was it now? Even just something as new as Noel that came out is now my fiance's favorite holiday movie right now. So she just thinks it's super sweet and wonderful, and she'll watch it every year at this point.
Jennifer's Body is another film that I'm seeing a lot of people come around on. Was it not Fragility? What's the Bill Paxton movie? Starts with an F. Frailty.
Yeah.
Frailty is another one that people are, I'm seeing come around more and more on. Clown Town, another one that people are coming around on more and more on. One of the advantages to streaming is everyone has access to a lot more of the smaller movies that
24/7.
Yeah, 24/7 that don't normally get the attention that they deserve. And by them being available 24/7, they become more and more that kind of thing that you can put on at 11 o'clock at night, because like, ah, screw it. If I like it, I'll stay up. If not, I'll just go to bed. And this is one of those movies I can definitely see you putting on at like 10:30 at night. And then at 12:30 being like, okay, fine, I have to go to bed, but that was really fun. I'm glad I watched that.
Mm-hmm. And, kind of, people are going to yell at me, that's kind of me in Terminator Dark Fate right now, because I literally just watched that, and I swear to God, I had so much fun watching it, and I'm so sorry.
No, it's allowed. You've just been really hard. You've been really hard selling Terminator, whatever fate it is.
I'm sorry, it contains what has to be one of the single funniest Arnold Schwarzenegger moments I've seen in my lifetime.
Is it better than when he punches the camel?
Yes.
I doubt that. He punches a camel, David. A camel.
But the thing is, I don't want to tell you anything about this moment because it's just going to sap the joy from it.
He punches a camel, but okay, fine. We can accept that. Speaking of movies that are also movies, we're going to talk about, I guess now, Creepshow, the holiday special.
Yeah.
Which is the story of a bunch of... what do they call themselves? Not lycanthropes. They are a bunch of were fill in the blanks who have a support group. So we have a were, a wolf, a were cheetah, mm-hmm. a were tortoise.
Oh, that's the best one.
A furry, and then someone who is not that specific about what kind of.
And then a were boar.
Yes, and a were boar. And a person who's not that specific about what sort of awareness. That they are. Now, this is directed by Greg Nicotero, and it's not a full feature. It's about 45 minutes long, but it has a lot in common with Rare Exports in that it is one of the only two movies that I can think of that involves a very large horde of Santas attacking our protagonists.
This film... we've gone from a film that has decided to take itself very seriously and then commit to the bit. And then you have a film that is very much the opposite and is so tongue-in-cheek that the tongue has punctured the cheek.
Everybody might as well be staring at the camera the entire time.
Yes.
It is fun, I will say. It stars Adam Pally, who people would know from what's the television show I'm blanking on right now? It is the television show Happy Endings, which is kind of like the fun sister program to Community in certain ways. And he plays a werewolf who goes to this support group. And then it turns out, I don't know if, I mean, I guess, does this count as a spoiler? I mean, it's kind of the setup of the
whole movie is a spoiler in the sense that...
It's short enough that... Yeah, it's kind of...
It's because it's 45 minutes long. It's an episode... Because this whole Creepshow now has become...
A series.
A series on Shudder.
Yes.
Which, by the way, is a very good series.
Oh, yeah.
I enjoy it quite a bit. This one is a lot less serious, or takes itself a lot less seriously than the actual show itself. But this was sort of their chance to be like, we're making a holiday special. Here, have fun.
Yeah, Greg Nicotero is going to get to do some really fun makeup effects. There's going to be some silly jokes.
Silly monster costumes.
We're going to poke fun at furries. And the setup essentially is that going back to biblical days, someone was transformed into a were person.
A dude by the name of Bob.
Indeed, Bob.
In the book of Bob.
And then Santa Claus was given, not invincible, but... very strong red armor in order to fight the various wear thingies. And from the days of old until now, there has been a ages-old battle between the Santa Clauses and the wear peoples. And on this particular evening, everything comes to a head. And Santa Clauses fight a wear tortoise and a wear boar and a werewolf and a furry... And
a were-cheetah.
And a were-cheetah.
Very horny were-cheetah.
A very horny were-cheetah. And someone who eventually ends up being another werewolf, but furries to the rescue. I would say it is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say it is essential viewing. But also, it is a good palate cleanser between things. It is a good... fun way to spend 45 minutes with a bunch of friends where you can all kind of talk through it and have a good time. There's not a lot of hardcore plot really to mix or to miss.
It's a quick watch, and so it doesn't go. You're not going too out of your way to give it a try, and I'm very glad that I gave it a try. I'm very glad we decided to do the double feature, specifically just because Katie and I got to sit down and just for a little while laugh our asses off to sort of alleviate ourselves from the stresses that are getting ready for the holidays, even though we're not going anywhere, and especially kind of forgetting about all the shit going on right now and all the crap happening, and for once just check our brains at the door and just enjoy some stupid holiday fun.
So the wife enjoyed these, or at least one?
She liked it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, she enjoyed both movies. She thought both movies had something to it, and very similar to my opinion, where she thought at the end could have done a little differently. And Rare Exports for her was not at all what she expected.
Interesting, okay.
So that was more the one where she's just like, huh, okay, so they just sell Santa Clauses now?
The slavery aspect in Rare Exports is an asterisk to any discussion that needs to happen of like a, ooh, okay.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of catching a horse so that you can ride it. You know, but then again, this is a mythical creature.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of, like, the idea is, like, it looks like a human, but really it's a mythical creature that will rip your face off if you're not careful. So don't go smoking a cigarette or cursing while drunk, because you will get gutted. Like, I think it sort of makes up for that whole aspect of it. Also, I think for once it's nice to see white people become slaves. That's a weird thing to say, but I don't know.
I mean, at least it's a nice change of pace, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So, David, next week we have two movies up on the docket here. One of which is The Fifth Chord, which is an Italian giallo film.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that it is particularly distinctive is because it is shot by a young man named Vittorio Storaro. Do you know who Vittorio Storaro is?
Can't say that I do. It sounds like a very festive pasta.
He shot a little movie called Apocalypse Now.
Oh!
He shot a little movie called Dick Tracy.
Oh, thanks. Keep making me feel bad. Yeah, these movies that I fucking love.
He is one
love
of the...
Love Dick Tracy.
He is easily top three greatest cinematographers of all time. And he shot an Italian horror film with Franco Nero called The Fifth Chord that is gorgeous and amazing, and I love it. Now, the other film that we are going to talk about is a little movie called Dead Heat. Do you know anything about Dead Heat?
Can't say that I do.
Treat Williams, Joe Piscopo, Zombie Police.
I mean, I've heard of Maniac Cop. Outside of that...
Imagine that, but much sillier.
Okay.
So, David, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to program the time machine here. Beep, 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 beep. Sorry, the hydraulics there are a little, gotta patch those up.
Gotta put some oil on there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So, Dave, if you want to step in here with me, we're going to go ahead and close this guy up.
All right.
And in a couple of moments, we'll be back from the future, where David has seen both of these trailers. Are you ready? Engage. David, welcome to the future. How do you feel?
You know, feels like we just had a spa day, Ken.
It's true.
Feel relaxed, calm.
Time travel does feel like going to the spa. It's like getting your butt rubbed by a large Russian man who then beats you mercilessly.
Kind of feel pensive.
I was going for thoughtful.
Those are interesting.
So, David, which of those two movies look more interesting to you?
Give me the names again, because there's Dead Heat.
The Fifth Chord?
The Fifth Chord.
And Dead Heat.
Okay. You know, I'm going to go on a little bit more of an artistic edge, and I'm going to go with the Third Chord.
Fifth Chord. Yes.
Fifth. There we go.
Starring Franco Nero, yes. Cinematography
also,
by
Vittorio Storaro. I have seen Dick Tracy, and it is one of my favorite movies. That movie will never not be amazing to me.
And the cinematography in that movie and in this one, and frankly, everything that Vittorio's ever done.
Oh,
also, fun fact, also did the Dune miniseries on Sci-Fi. One of those weird, like, he did what now? What was he? Did he just have an opening in his schedule? And he's like, I'm going to do a sci-fi movie? Yeah, lose a bet? What happened, Vittorio? But, yeah, so, all right, well, very cool. Well, David, question. Do you have any plugs that you want to pluggable?
I do. Once again, I'm going to once again plug our independent film, Serena Waits, which I am happy to announce has now surpassed over 1 million views.
Ooh, congrats. And,
you know, doing okay in the reviews, which, you know, I'm perfectly happy to get on board with. And it's one of those cases where we worked on like less than a quarter of a shoestring budget, and to see if we could legitimately make a film, like a 90-page script film, in 3 days. So it was definitely a challenge for us, and everyone on set and everyone in the cast worked their asses off. And so, yeah, I will continue to pitch this film because I think hard work deserves some variation of reward. So, yeah, feel free to check that out on Amazon Prime. And you can also, I believe, for right now, Amazon Prime. That's what I can think of.
The other person I want to make sure to definitely do a shout-out to and a special thank you is to Ryan Heilman. Ryan is our very first supporter, the first person to send us a little tip, a little something to help us buy some beer while we have these conversations. We just wanted to say, Ryan, you're a player and a pimp, and we love you.
Oh my God, thank you so much, Ryan. I am cheersing this beer to you, good sir.
Cheers indeed. Ryan, to you. Now, David, where can people find you on the internets?
You can find me on Instagram at _DWMarlowe. I would almost say you could find me on Twitter, but for some reason, I have found myself suspended. One would say permanently? I don't know why. I imagine it has to do with something political. Who knows? But yeah, so feel free to check me out on Instagram. And also, once again, a holiday shout-out to Ben Moy, who did the theme for this podcast. You can check out his podcast, Hooked on Score, wherever you find your podcasts.
And you can find The Shudder Show on Twitter at Shudder Show. You can find us on Instagram at Shudder_Show. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ken Stachnik, KenStachnik. To all of our friends out there on the internet, we love you and go fuck yourselves.
Merry Christmas, you filthy fucking animals.
Good night.